Next month, former President Jimmy Carter plans to go to Cuba. It will be the first visit by a U.S. president since the Cuban Revolution. Cuban officials say this is the latest sign that the American people want warmer relations with Cuba. U.S. farmers certainly do, and Cuban leader Fidel Castro has encouraged them by purchasing agricultural exports from the U.S. Farmers want the four-decade-old economic embargo against Cuba lifted, but the Bush administration says that's not going to happen. NPR's Kathleen Schalk reports.
When it comes to Cuba, the Bush administration is unwavering. Otto Reich, Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, says this administration's goal is a rapid, peaceful transition to a free Cuba.
One way we can help, by the way, is not throwing a lifeline to a failed, corrupt, dictatorial, murderous regime. We're not going to do it. We are not going to help Fidel Castro stay in power by opening up our markets to Cuba.
But opening markets to Cuba seems like an excellent idea to many politicians and farmers from states like Arkansas. Many of them have been in contact with Fidel Castro for years.
As a person, I don't think he's a person that you cannot like.
David Hillman, president of the Arkansas Farm Bureau, took his first trip back in the spring of 2000 and attended one of Castro's famously long dinner parties.
Fidel Castro is one of the most fascinating people I've ever met. Extremely intelligent, can talk about any subject for hours and hours and hours. We got to his palace about 9:30 and left about 4:30 the next morning.
Hillman says Castro spoke to his guests for 2 hours about the virtues of water buffalo milk and then had some brought in. It looked very thick and kind of icky. Castro drank his right down.
I looked at him and I thought to myself, "Old man, if you can do that, I can too." So I held my nose not literally but figuratively, and drank it down, and you know what? It wasn't so bad after all.
Hillman says Cuba wasn't as bad a place as he'd imagined either, and he's convinced reopening trade would benefit both the Cuban people and the people in his home state. Here at the headquarters of Riceland Foods in Stuttgart, Arkansas, rice pours from a hopper into 50-pound bags. Then a giant sewing machine stitches them closed. Riceland's chairman and CEO Richard Bell says before the revolution, a lot of bags like this got shipped off to Cuba.
They were our top market for U.S. rice, and it accounted for about half of all the exports we had at that time.
Then came a string of business disasters. Riceland Vice President Bill Reed says after Cuba's revolution, the next biggest market was Iran.
That lasted until the Ayatollah Khomeini took control of the country and ended all imports from the United States. Following the loss of the Iranian market, the next country that emerged was Iraq. It'd almost be comical, but it's far too serious because we're dealing with the very livelihood, the lifeblood of the U.S. rice industry.
Farm groups desperate for markets have lobbied for years to get the Cuba embargo lifted. In 2000, Congress obliged, sort of. It created a special exemption for food exports. At first, Castro refused to buy until all the sanctions were lifted. But last November, he changed his mind. Since then, Riceland's Richard Bell says, Cuba's bought food from 25 states, including 20,000 tons of milled rice.
We are supplying 12,500 of that.
The Farm Bureau's David Hillman believes this is just the beginning.
For 40 years, we've been standing there in front of the dike, the little boy with his finger in the dike. I think the finger is out of the dike now.
Hillman says Cuban officials are excited. They're accustomed to paying steep freight charges and waiting for weeks for food from Europe, Asia, and South America. Shipments from the U.S. can arrive in just 2 days. But how much could Cuba actually buy? A lot, according to Sally Grooms Cole, president of the Cuba Policy Foundation, if the U.S. lifted all curbs on trade and tourism.
Cuba would be purchasing up to $1.24 billion annually in farm products from the United States. So I think what you've seen in these first purchases is really only the tip of the iceberg of where we might go with this.
Some analysts are skeptical about Cuba's potential, at least in the short term. John Kavalik, who directs the U.S.-Cuba Trade and Economic Council, points out that Cuba today is a poor country that has defaulted on billions in foreign debt and has very little in the way of hard currency. So far, it's paid cash for what it's bought from the U.S., but to import much more, he says, Cuba would need credit and lots of it.
Right now, if you export products to Cuba without a confirmed letter of credit, you could very well wait 300 days to collect your money. Now, that's not a good commercial environment.
And there are still major political hurdles. The White House is not impressed by President Castro's recent overtures. In addition, the president's brother Jeb is running for re-election as governor of Florida, where Cuban exiles take the embargo very seriously. Many of them live in Republican Congresswoman Ileana Rose-Layton's district in and around Miami. She chastises lawmakers who want to open trade with Cuba for putting money ahead of principles.
You know, they go there and they stay in their fancy hotels and they get serenaded by Fidel Castro and they all come back saying, oh, what an intelligent man, and he fed us caviar and he fed us lobster. Meanwhile, the people of Cuba are starving, not because of the U.S. embargo, but because of the failed policies of the Castro regime.
Rose-Layton says she's confident that President Bush will block any effort to ease the sanctions. A test may come soon. Congress is wrapping up a farm bill that could create another crack in the embargo by allowing private U.S. companies to begin lending money to the Cuban government to pay for American agricultural exports. The Bush administration opposes this, but so far the president hasn't threatened a veto. Kathleen Schalk, NPR News, Washington.